Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We begin with a report from Gezi Park in Istanbul, the scene of the original demonstration by environmentalists that were brutally put down and has since morphed into the biggest political protest against the 10-year rule of Turkey's Islamist government. Independent journalist Fabian Tepper joins us from the scene of the continuing protests for an update and an analysis of this massive political upheaval that most of the Turkish press is not covering. Then we'll look into the irony that the United States, having made enormous sacrifices with the loss of thousands of lives at a cost of trillions in taxpayer money, lost out to China, now the winner of the Iraq War, in terms of access to the oil that the US liberated. An expert on oil monarchies and the Gulf states, Gregory Gores, the department chair and professor of political science at the University of Vermont, joins us to discuss the changing global oil market. Then finally, with the Republicans set to gain another seat in the Senate following the death of Senator Lautenberg, we'll examine the unprecedented use of the filibuster by the Republicans that has become routine and is now finally being challenged by the White House. Douglas Daniels, a former staff reporter for campaigns and elections, joins us to discuss the public's frustration with gridlock that the media blames on both sides, although the Republicans are clearly the obstructionists. And joining us now from Istanbul is Fabian Tepper, who is an independent journalist and editor of Sentient Cincinnati. She was a 2011 fellow at the Poynter Institute for Media Studies and a 2013 resident writer at Mesa Refuge. Welcome to Background Briefing, Fabian Tepper.
Thanks, Ian. It's nice to be back.
And tell me what's going on outside. You're right on Taksim Square, are you not?
Yeah, I'm right at the edge of Gezi Park. I was on Gezi Park, which was thronging with people 2 hours ago. Police and helicopters dropped tear gas bombs at three locations sort of around the perimeter of the park, and people just came thronging in. They're shining lasers on the helicopters as they circle. And as I walked to the edge of the park, I really got a face full of the tear gas. So about 10 minutes ago, the helicopters dropped another tear gas bomb very close to the east edge of the park. And for the last 24 hours, protesters have been building up barricades around every possible entrance to the park in order to keep out large police vehicles. So this is obviously what the police have resorted to in order to try and clear the park out. But it's doing anything but. People are standing their ground, protecting themselves with antacid, vinegar, lemons, swimming goggles, and medical masks, and remaining there. Many of them say for as long as it takes for the government to concede this public park to the public.
And this, of course, is the park. Gezi Park is the park where the contention started, where environmentalists protested the idea of cutting down trees and putting in a shopping mall. And that began the protest. And it's right next to Taksim Square, where hundreds of thousands showed up, or at least 100,000 showed up. So just getting the geography correct.
That's right. Yeah, Taksim Square is a sort of touristic and political demonstration center of the city, and Gezi Park is right adjacent to it. It's really the only place in the city center where you can see anything green, actually. And that's why this started out as a fairly small protest, but the numbers are swelling even since yesterday when there was a really massive popular protest. It seems every time the police bomb, it really fans the flames of people who are angry about what they see as a government that's failing to take public voices into account in their decision-making and using excessive force.
But apparently, as far as the press in Turkey is concerned, they're in an alternative universe. Sabah, the main newspaper, yesterday's front page had Prime Minister Erdogan being rewarded for trying to stamp out smoking. The television networks are not broadcasting anything about what's happening in Taksim Square. Where are the people in the country getting the information about what's really happening?
Well, there is one television network called Halk TV, which is pretty much full-time broadcasting the protests. I just heard that their ratings have soared. I've been in a lot of small donor shops which are broadcasting that channel. So fortunately, there's one network that has had a lot of conflict with the government in the past. They've had journalists thrown out by the government. But they're continuing to show what's happening, and they're not shying away from instances that some people might consider brutal, excessive use of force. So people are finding ways, and of course this is a protest that's very much enabled and fueled by Twitter and Facebook, even though someone caused both of those services to be jammed in the Taksim area a couple of days ago. But Turks are, I think, expert by now at circumventing social media censorship, so they find plenty of ways to get around those jams.
But the fact remains that Fabian Tepe, again speaking to us from Gezi Park next to Taksim Square in Istanbul, where the protests are continuing, Turkey has the dubious distinction of having a worse record than China or Iran for jailing journalists, as well as imprisoning activists. So what is the sense then amongst Turks about why it is that you have this essentially free country that has allowed a leader who's been popularly elected to be so autocratic? And I mean, it seems to me it has echoes of Putin in Russia.
Well, that's a good question. So what people are saying is that the current president had a lot of appeal among people who are interested in his kind of return to a more religious Turkey. So he did win a majority vote. He certainly won large majorities in religious and conservative communities and rural areas. But a lot of people have been showing up for this protest who say that they've never protested before, that they did support Erdogan in the last election, but that they had no idea that he would treat citizens this way. So it seems that, based on the interviews I've been giving, it seems that he's losing plenty of support among people who liked the platform he ran on.
Well, he's behaved in an extremely dismissive and arrogant manner towards the protesters. And in fact, today he's flown off to North Africa and basically said this will pass in a very dismissive way. But it does seem that his government are getting very intrusive in terms of a social agenda. Not only have they put restrictions on alcohol, Erdogan himself has stated publicly that women should have at least 3 children. So I'm trying to get an American analogy here. Would this be a little bit like having Pat Robertson, Reverend Pat Robertson, as our president?
Yeah, I think it might be. Right now, the signs in Gezi Park are addressing a lot of these areas that he's been cracking down on. You know, there are signs that say, you know, I can kiss who I want, I can love who I want, I'm a woman and I can decide how many children I want to have, right? People are not seeing this as, you know, just another example of Turkish patriarchy. They see this as, you know, a really dangerous return to a sort of pre-secular Turkey. So yes, people are pretty horrified by the kinds of policies that Erdogan is pushing without popular support. And yeah, I think that's a pretty decent analogy. He's cracking down on sexual freedoms and lifestyle freedoms, and there's widespread anger about that.
Well, his Justice and Development Party, the AKP, appears to be very big on at least the development side as opposed to the justice side. And I suppose that explains why the media is so supine, because it's controlled by these wealthy oligarchs, not unlike our media here in the United States, who obviously are in bed with the government on these development projects and don't want to rock the boat. Is that what the complicity is here with this silent press?
Yeah, I think it could be. There seems to be quite a bit of complicity. There's a lot of centralized power that is shared between, you know, governments and corporations, you know, just like we have in the United States. Yeah, certainly the press is very much silenced by the government, and people who do support Erdogan. I've met people who support Erdogan, and you know, they've said he's been good for the economy, you know, and he's certainly supported free markets. You know, he's a fairly capitalistic leader. And there's also quite a bit of patriotism in both his supporters and the largest segment of the resistance, right? So I've spoken to people who say they don't think he's necessarily behaved well as a president. They don't necessarily support his policies, but they feel it's important that Erdogan's prestige remains strong internationally in order to support Turkey in any conflicts it may have with other countries. So I've been hearing that, you know, people who actually support his actions with the police this week, based on the idea that the pride of the Turkish government is an important thing to maintain, if that makes sense.
Well, it does make sense, because
he would be losing face.
Right.
He would be losing face if he were to back off or concede this park.
Well, but that sort of seems like a trickle-down patriarchal attitude, isn't it? He's patriarchal, arrogant, and insular. I mean, the fact that politicians in Turkey frequently and freely sue journalists for defamation, I mean, if that happened here, I would have been out of business a long time ago.
Sure. It's not a good place to be a journalist. Fortunately, they have, you know, they don't crack down on foreign journalists the same way. So I do think that it, given that difference, you know, that gives us foreign journalists an obligation to report carefully on what we're seeing. You know, I don't feel endangered as a journalist here, and there are a lot of foreign journalists, you know, in the middle of this conflict. But fortunately, through social media, Turks are able to access foreign reports, so we do what we can do, right?
Well, again, I'm speaking with Fabienne Tepper, who is in Istanbul. She's in Gezi Park next to the main Taksim Square, and where she's been witnessing the police dropping tear gas from helicopters and the crowds in turn shining lasers at the helicopters. Obviously, the politics are changing, even if there's a press blackout on much of the activity. As you pointed out, Fabienne, the message is getting out via social media. So it looks as if the people and the public are way ahead of the feckless opposition, and Erdogan has won the last three elections and is the first in a long time to have his party, AKP, to have a full majority in the House. So you have a divided and somewhat useless opposition. The fact that the public are ahead of them, will that mean that they will push the opposition into getting more cohesive and exercising their influence and expressing the will of the people?
It may mean that. You're right that the opposition is quite divided. There is an incredible different number of flags that have been flown over the past weekend. Everyone brings their political flags to these protests. And the main opposition party is widely criticized. Its platform, I would say, may not be the most compelling platform. So I don't know which branch, if any, of the opposition will be strengthened, but it does seem likely that that the government may not get such a wide majority that would give it the mandate to make all of the unchallenged changes it's been making. But yeah, it remains to see how the various parties will respond.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here from Gezi Park and from Istanbul and giving us an update, Fabienne Tepper, on what is happening there. And I guess democracy is coming back to Turkey. Is that a final blanket description?
Yeah, well, let's hope so. There's a very strong, very unified voice that says we want real democracy. So there's no question about what the message is in this resistance. So let's hope they get some of what they're looking for.
Well, I thank you again for joining us, Fabienne Tepper.
My pleasure. Thank you, Ian.
And again, I've been speaking with Fabienne Tepper, who is an independent journalist and editor of Sentient Cincinnati. She was a 2011 fellow at the Poynter Institute for Media Studies and a 2013 resident writer at Mesa Refuge. And she joined us from Gezi Park in Istanbul. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about how China won the Iraq War.